Yeah, you should talk to Chuck Levels.
Oh, okay. What do I say?
You should be louder than that. Just be loud.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with James Zimmerman, author of Deliverance at Hand, The Redemption of a Devout Jehovah's Witness, about growing up as a Jehovah's Witness and moving away from the faith.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am one of your hosts, Tim Wick, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hi.
And Molly Glover.
Hello.
And we are very excited to have with us the author of a brand new book coming out just today.
Yes.
Today, October 15th. The name of the book is Deliverance at Hand, The Redemption of a Devout Jehovah's Witness, written by James Zimmerman. Hi, James. Welcome to our podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yay.
I have to say, we got an advance copy of your book, which was super cool because it makes it seem like legitimate and stuff.
I felt so special. It was like the bag doesn't even. It's clearly an advance copy. It was very.
Yeah, and the book is about your journey from being a Jehovah's Witness to being an atheist, which was fascinating just to read about. The community that you were a part of, and how hard you had to work against that community, and how hard that community, even without directly influencing, even without you talking about what those doubts you were having in your head, how that community really worked against you for a long time.
Yeah, it's a pretty well-oiled machine.
Yeah. So, I think... I just want to start. Can you talk a little bit about Jehovah's Witnesses, so people kind of understand where you came from?
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a wide open question.
I know.
Like, we're Minnesotan. Yeah. I think like the mainstream kind of religion here would be like Lutheranism,
sure, yeah.
Maybe. What would set it apart from that?
Okay, I like that one better.
Tim.
Yeah, Witnesses, they started by splitting off from mainstream Christianity in the mid-1900s, around the same time as Seventh-day Adventists and Mormons got their start. And they're also an American religion. They consider themselves to be Christians, although a lot of Christians, of course, would say they're not really Christians. I think a main thing that sets them apart is, first of all, they are extremely unified. Everything comes from the top down, so there's not like a differentiation between witnesses in New England versus witnesses in Russia. I mean, they all get the same direction, you know, and you don't see that in some of the larger denominations. Also, they don't think that they're going to heaven. They think that God made the earth for people, and that was his original idea, and that's still his idea, and that one day he's going to bring Armageddon, and he's going to do that really soon. He's going to get rid of all the wicked or bad people or evil people, whatever you want to call it, and then only the good people will survive, which will be witnesses, of course, right? Especially if you're a good, devout witness.
Why wouldn't it be witnesses?
Right, yeah. And maybe some, I mean, they never say it won't be exclusively witnesses. I mean, it might be, you know, some Muslim baby that was born in a coma. That's also good, I'm sure, you know. But then also people who were faithful, however you want to define that, will be resurrected to Earth. So then we'll all live on Earth, and it will be just as, like, the whole planet will become like the Garden of Eden.
So it's like the planet,
clothes.
it gets converted to an idyllic afterlife. In a sense, but no one has to die.
It's corporeal.
Yes, it's corporeal, but there won't be any more disease. People won't grow old. People won't die.
Sure.
And there won't be any pollution. There won't be any government on Earth to an extent, because God will be the government.
Jehovah's there,
yeah,
so
Jehovah's
we'll just do what he says.
And he'll have his angels doing some of the work, and of course they still think things will be organized like on a congregational level, so in this area, you know, in St. Paul, or what was St. Paul, there'll still be the local elders here guiding guiding us. So
I
It would suck to be old already. This is a stupid question.
I presume that they'll grow younger. So have that it's illustrated in some of their books. They'll show like an old lady, you know, with the walker and the white hair, and then the next picture she doesn't have the walker and she's standing a little bit more erect, and then the next picture she's got her beautiful locks.
What's the sweet spot? Like everyone's 25 or
They don't really say that. Sometimes in casual conversation with other witnesses, we would joke about stuff like that. Like, what's the age you'll be? You know, so
I wonder if it's like the Matrix. It's whatever age that you were happiest.
I would think that the best thing about the whole thing is in that kind of a post-apocalyptic scenario, you wouldn't have to witness to anybody.
There were always a lot of funny conversations that were not officially sanctioned, but that we'd have with our buddies, you know, like, what are we going to wear? Or if we're living forever, like this friend of mine said, he was just going to live underneath the stairs of his house for 1,000 years just because he could. Not going to shave, not going to cut his hair, just going to do it. And I once joked that I was going to write, like, the world's longest novel by penning a single letter every 10,000 years. You know, and eventually, it will be the longest novel ever written.
Did it feel like you were just skirting around blasphemy saying those things? I mean, did it ever feel like if you were to say those to an elder, you'd get in trouble.
The Watchtower Society doesn't offer specifics on what will happen.
Sure.
I mean, they'll say no sickness, no diseases, but they don't really say, like, after 1,000 years, will we suddenly become all infertile? Because otherwise, eventually, this place is going to be overpopulated.
Right.
Will Antarctica suddenly become tropical so we can have access to the whole globe? What if I'm standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon and I fall in? Do I don't die, obviously, or do I, but just get resurrected instantly?
Maybe you could float.
Do I get hurt, but then, like, Wolverine? And, just take a few moments to come back
into
shape?
It hurts every time.
So, yeah.
We could go on this for the whole time, but I want to get back to the book a little bit. And you were very devout to the point that you did something, you did what was called being a pioneer.
Yeah.
And can you explain what that is? Just because to me it just sounds like the craziest thing ever.
Yeah. Well, as the name of their religion implies, they're supposed to go witnessing. In fact, they don't even count you. I mean, you can self-identify as a witness, show up at all their meetings and believe all their teachings, but you still will not be counted in their official numbers as a witness if you don't go door-to-door and report that time regularly.
If you're not a publisher,
at least. That's called a public... That's the bare minimum that you can be as a publisher. And what that means is that they go door-to-door. And it should be regularly. They try to encourage it weekly. So by the end of a month, if you went out in service, which is their nice term for door-to-door, if you went out in service, say, once a week, every Saturday morning, which is the usual, then at the end of the month you got 10 to 14 hours, maybe. And that's what 90% of the witnesses do. And they'll write, you know, they did this many hours, they gave away this many magazines and Bibles, and they drop that in a slot every month. But you can become a pioneer. And the rules for that have changed over the decades. But during the time period when I wrote my that's covered in my book, like the 80s and 90s, being a pioneer meant that you got in 1,000 hours a year doing door-to-door, which came out to about 85, 90 hours a month. So
that's just it's more than a full-time job just spent getting a lot of doors shut in your face.
Yeah, because you're only supposed to...
What full-time job do you work at?
It's more than a full-time job. 80 hours... Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm thinking a week.
But here's the thing.
It's a part-time job.
Yeah.
You can't... You're not supposed to count everything. So when I would show up at the... at their meeting hall, which they call a Kingdom Hall, when I would show up there at 9 o'clock in the morning, that didn't start my time.
Right.
You know, that's where we met for groups. We would share scripture and pray. We'd get into the car groups, then drive to the area where we were going to go door-to-door. Then I would start my time. By now, it's already 9:30. And if at, like, 11:30, we stop at Wendy's and have lunch, and we're there till 12:30, I don't count that hour. I didn't get, like, a 15-minute break.
If one of you, like, witness while you're eating.
Yeah, and in the book, you see, I have to do a lot of cheating. It kind of accumulates more and more until it's so ridiculous. My wife, who is, you know, honest to a fault, that she just can't handle it. She's like, we're just copying out every step of the way.
So you became, and I can't remember the term, when you were very young, you became, is it baptized? That you became like an official man of the church?
I was appointed as a ministerial servant, is that the term you're looking for?
And so you actually, there was a time when none of the other men showed up, and so you were like 8 or 9, and you were actually in charge?
Okay, so we're confusing a couple things. So I got baptized when I was 12.
Right.
Which they encourage you, they don't do infant baptism. They don't think little kids like kindergartners should get baptized. They think it should be someone who's been exposed to the religion for a while and has made a decision that that's what they want to do. So you don't really see anyone.
I can dig that. I mean,
I agree with that.
That's fair.
I don't see I never really saw anyone under like the age of 10 getting baptized. Mm-hmm. And most people were in their teens. My wife was, she wasn't my wife then, but she was 15. My sister mm-hmm. was, I think, 16. I was 12, so I was on the younger side, but it wasn't considered ridiculous. Later, I was appointed a ministerial servant. That's a okay. different thing. But so, well, once you're baptized, you're considered, yeah, a man or yeah. a brother in the organization, and you're the spiritual head of all the women in the congregation. They have no titles. They're all just publishers or maybe pioneers, but they don't mm-hmm. have any titles. They don't have any duties in the congregation. They don't even, like, pass the microphones during the Q&A sessions or work the literature counters or anything like that. So, yeah, that was weird, is that I would show up at the meeting for service in the morning to go door-to-door, sometimes during a weekday with my mom, you know, because mm-hmm. it's summer break, and there would be all these other housewives, and they're all in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even older, and then here I am, I'm 12, and I'm expected to conduct the meeting, so that
and
was...
And the carpooling, and determine where everyone's going, and you had to make all the decisions, and it's just...
just yeah. because you're a man.
Just because, well, yeah. a baptized
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was almost silly, because, like, you don't really know what to do, and then you'd have these women who've been witnesses for half a century. They, of course, know what to do, and we'd go into a neighborhood, and they'd look at me, and they'd say, what should we do? As if I wasn't there, they wouldn't know that these, just two of you go over there yeah. and just do every door, yeah. and you two do every other one and just do that. I mean, yeah. it was kind of strange, so.
Yeah, that's...
They would almost have to forcibly... kowtow to me, because you were not a natural
leader. Do you think we should go do this?
Well, the reason I brought it up was there was a time when I know I when you had just started pioneering school, and that you were having kind of a it seemed like the four of you in the car were just having a discussion as to what you could count and what you couldn't for the time, and there was disagreement as to what counted and what didn't, and I just think it would be really hard, like you're saying, your wife honest to a fault. Like, it'd be hard for me too. I'm that same way where it'd be like I wouldn't. It's like, well, that's not supposed to count, so I can't put it yeah. down. But I would be so torn because I'm so tired.
yeah, there would be times that we'd go back to the Kingdom Hall at the end of the day so that everyone can get back in their own cars, right? So now let's say it's 3:00. My wife and I would drive home to the apartment building where we'd live. Well, how about I just take a couple magazines, run downstairs, and throw them in the laundry room there. Now it's 3:15. Maybe I kept my time going till 3:15. Yes. That's the sort of gymnastics I had to yeah. do in the book that my wife would be okay with at first, but after a while, as you see, she's just like, this is just yeah. stupid that we're
it
doing
wears.
This.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it's, yeah.
She's like, how can God be liking this? How can this really be bona fide time? Obviously, we can't accumulate 1,000 hours. Maybe we should try shooting for quality instead of quantity. So
Was that something that led towards her kind of changing her mind? Was the how realistic is it that we log 1,000 hours accurately and honestly, and you know, did that kind of get her gears turning?
Yeah, no, I don't think that was a big deal. I think that was more just her saying we shouldn't be pioneers. Those are people who are more extroverted or who have a lot more time on their hands. Mm-hmm. That's why you see a lot of just housewives without kids would do it because mm-hmm. they have no children, their husband sure. makes all the money, so yeah, they can do it, you know. Or you mm-hmm. would see, you'd get a lot of young people doing it because they graduated from high school, they take a year to do it, you know, so that right. mom and dad are paying for everything. They obviously have no kids, they might not even have a boyfriend or girlfriend, so
you don't go to college because
yeah,
JWs don't go to college.
Yeah. So, but for us, it was getting tougher because we had each other, so you know, you're supposed to spend time with your spouse, and then also obviously we had to work to make some money, so mm-hmm. it was getting tougher.
Is there a lot of prestige attached to being a pioneer? Like,
yeah, there is, yeah,
there is. Like, those are the cool kids.
I don't know if we were considered cool.
The pious kids,
yeah, they're held up as examples,
yeah. It's like leading leaders.
Exemplars. Mm-hmm.
So reading the book, you had doubts. My interpretation is that you had doubts very early, that you had to work kind of pretty hard to stay away from. And as time goes, those doubts grow. And there's a point where it really felt to me like you had made a transition in your head to being an atheist, but not bad terminology, not in your heart. Mm-hmm. And it was really when your wife started to have doubts that came out.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting that she was the one that sort of made you admit what you clearly had been thinking for a long time.
Yeah, see, that's why I said she's honest to a fault, because I'm really good at being able to lie to myself. And we've had that conversation even in the years since then, that she's like, if you didn't marry me, if you married someone else or if you never got married, you'd maybe still be a witness, you know? Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, and I would have gotten killed crossing the street 5 years. I mean, you don't know. Sure, so sure. It's just a silly conversation, you know, but it's an interesting line of thought. So.
A theme in the book that I've seen here and there is that, or at least it's mentioned a couple of times, that stuck out to me was that whole remember Noah, like, because he preached for 40 years and no one listened to him, and so, like, it's held up, it seemed. Do they hold that up a lot when you have doubts about... Because it seems like no one's listening, or when you feel, obviously there's going to be days where you feel kind of down on witnessing, mm-hmm. because no, you're getting doors slammed in your face and people are rude.
Yeah. Yeah, that story comes up a lot because mm-hmm. it appeals to kids because of all the animals, and mm-hmm. it's kind of a fun adventure. It's not overtly violent or sexual like good chunks of the Bible. Right. It's not boring like the rest of the Bible. Yeah. So it's introduced to children right away. And then, it's always a good example because, of course, witnesses are always looking for... what am I trying to think of here? Examples in the Bible that point to, like, why they go door to door. There's obvious mm-hmm. examples in the New Testament because Jesus did it a few times. Yeah. He talked to the woman at the well and the apostles preached. But they even look for older examples. Jeremiah spoke out in Jerusalem against the idolatry there. But they trace it all the way back to Noah because while building the ark, if you read the Bible carefully there, while building the ark, he was also telling people, come on board with me because something's going to happen. So so it's a good parallel because he preached that whole time and no one came on board with him except his own family.
And then even better, like, oh, and he was right. Ha ha. Yeah. He got the last laugh.
Yeah.
So those doubts as a kid and those doubts as a teenager, I mean, it's easier to almost talk your, like you're saying, lie to yourself, talk yourself out of them. By saying I'm just feeling what's normal to feel this, you know. Remember Noah and think about all the
it's
different times.
It's confirmation bias. I mean, if you go through looking for something in the Bible, and you're willing to, like, be kind of loose with interpretation, you'll find it, and you'll find a good story that fits for you, and apply that, and it'll be popular. Why is it popular? Because it backs up the fact that we're right.
So the other thing, the other pattern that I see through the book, I mean, and I really like the way you lay it out. I mean, you talk mm-hmm. about friends that you made as witnesses who then leave the witnesses in the way that basically they stop being your friends. They stop being a part of your life at all. You have a friend who comes out as gay and leaves, and basically you don't talk to him again until after you come out as an atheist. And how is that experience? And the experience was the same for you and your wife when you came out. Basically, you had friends who, one day you were spending time with them, and the next day they just shut you out.
Yeah,
and that had to be that's got to be really difficult to know that that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a real Becky.
Yeah.
Hooray!
it's fantastic. It's really saddening because when I was a kid, and I gave an example there of seeing someone who had left the religion, I think at a hardware store mm-hmm, or something. Mm-hmm. And then it's okay because, as a kid, I just think, oh, this person turned their back on God and their family and they're living some debauched, evil life.
Horrible
and
man.
I'm supposed to shun him. And for the most part, it's okay because I never see him except one day, I bumped into him at the automotive store, But then when I am an adult, suddenly it's really difficult. Like, my friend leaves the religion, but it seems more like he was pushed out, not that he did anything wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah.
thinking, okay, so he likes guys. Yeah, that grosses me out, but the thought of my parents having sex also grosses me out. Like, I'm not really bothered by it.
He still loves Jehovah. Isn't that the point?
Yeah, like, he still loved God, and he said he wasn't turning away from theology and religion in general. And then, so first of all, I don't think he's evil incarnate, and then also it's really tough to shun him because, unlike the people that I've known in the past that I shun, I actually work with this guy. So how do you shun a coworker?
Uh-huh.
You can say that, oh, I'm having a big argument with my friend who is my coworker and we're not talking to each other right now, but after a while our coworkers thought something was weird. They were like, how come you and Jeremy used to be over at each other's houses all the time, and now he walks in the store and
broke
you
up.
Talk to him? Seems strange.
And then now, it's been... How long has it been since you came out as an atheist?
Six years? 7 years? Seven.
Okay.
Let's go with seven.
In the book, at least your family, your parents have maintained a relationship with you, which I think is kind of unusual, it seems, for some witnesses. Have you... Over time, have any... Because you reconnect with the friends that you basically lost mm-hmm. when they left the faith. You reconnected with them. Have any of the people that you, quote, I guess say left behind? Have they, it's a bad term. So, but have any of the people that you left behind, have you managed to, have they reconnected with you, or are they just out of your life?
Yeah, there's been a few people who have also left the religion in the years since, and then, of course, they'll hook up with us. Maybe some of them we weren't good friends with before, and so we're still not now. They just maybe found us on Facebook, or, you know, you'll just see them at a store, and they're like, hey, I'm not a witness anymore. And it's like, oh, that's cool. You know, I have nothing against them. They just weren't my friends before, and life is busy. But, yeah, but as far as the main people in our life, like the friends that I talk about shunning us, they are still all witnesses and shun us, and the same thing with my relatives. You're right about my parents. My parents are divorced and they both live in different states, so it's easy for them to keep in contact with us remotely because they're not going to run into us every day anyway.
Are they both still witnesses?
Yeah, they are.
Is divorce it's very frowned upon?
Yeah, it is. It happens, but
I think it's that Jehovah hates a divorcing. Yeah,
Yeah, and you're right about that here too, how that was a difficult situation. And, you know, throughout the book, it's kind of amazing the number of times that you are questioning the elders about something, and they have an opportunity, I think, they have an opportunity to strengthen your faith, and what they always manage to do is weaken it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like...
mostly just by being dicks. There's so many times where I'm like, man, that's a dick thing to say. Yeah. Like, he could have just been way cooler about that, and this, like, questioning young man would not have felt so rebuffed. I mean, just...
Yeah, do you think if that had been different, do you think you would have ended up in the same place spiritually, or do you feel like kind of your road to atheism was all, it might have been longer, but you might have gotten there anyway?
Yeah, I don't know, because the biggest issues for me was that the stuff in the Bible wasn't jiving with actual science and history, which I show in the book as the biggest issues. Mm-hmm. So the behavior of people in the congregation just seemed to, like you see when I have a big conversation with my wife about it at the end when she decides she's not going to be a witness, she points out all those things. You know, she says, well, witnesses say you should never get divorced. Well, look, your parents got divorced and now they're both happier. You know, or witnesses say the elders you can go to lean on and they're a shelter from the storm. But look at all the interactions we've had with the elders. Even now that we're having doubts, if we tell our friends, they're going to say, go talk to the elders. But these are the same friends who have badmouthed the elders because they've been beat down by them too. Mm-hmm. So that was just, don't know what to say without saying a cliche. It's like the straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah. Just one more shovel full on this big pile of problems. You know, it's like, oh yeah, not only does the Bible not seem like a true book, but witnesses aren't even that great at being the best people on earth. Like they claim. Yes. So
because they're human,
they could do a more convincing job
I mean, they do some. When you and your wife got married, there was a just married sign that a friend of yours made. And the elders told you that they didn't think you should use it.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of showing off.
But that you should do whatever you thought was best, and then you did, but that was wrong.
Yeah, they're really good at saying a lot of things. There's a lot of things where they'll say, well, we're not going to say this is wrong, or we don't say you can't do this. But if you go ahead and do it, then they'll get mad at you later. They'll bring it back up. Like, well, last time we asked you to do something and you went against us. That's, when in the book I say that I want to perform the wedding for my sister and her husband, and one of the elders brings up, well, last time we left something up to you, you did the opposite of what we said. So it, like, keeps coming up to haunt you, you know.
Amazingly Minnesotan religion, very passive-aggressive.
I was going to say, like, I don't think there's anything in the Watchtower literature that says you can't have a beard. But if you show up with a beard to the meetings, they're not going to let you do any of their privileges.
So ridiculous.
I need to point out right now that James has a beard.
I do, So that's just one of many things where it's like, you can't complain that, why are they so strict and don't let us have a beard? Because people will say, well, who says you can't have a beard? Yeah. But if I show up with a beard, you're not going to let me do any of the privileges here, which means that then I can't serve God wholehearted. So then why am I letting this beard stand in the way between my relationship between me and God?
Is it too showy? Is it because it's like a grooming, like it's fancy or what? What is the deal?
I don't know. I think I had that in the book and took it out for length, but the topic of having a beard, but... when I asked an elder once, he said, well, the problem is that it can become too unkempt and not look good, which didn't make sense to me because you could say the same about long hair.
On
your head,
hair.
Like a woman having long hair. Well, it could look like a bird's nest if she doesn't take care of it, right? Or anything. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's just...
We just don't like anything that is too individualistic or an expression of who you are.
Yeah, I can understand saying we don't want to see someone with 3-foot-long beard that's in, you know, spikes with chains on it. Yeah, that doesn't look becoming of a minister. But if they have a nicely groomed beard, like if they have nice hair on their head, mm-hmm. it looks good, I think. Sure. So.
Mm-hmm. That's hilarious.
Well, we are almost to our 5 questions. We could talk about this. I have a lot more questions.
It was such a... you guys, I'm not even kidding. Go buy this book. You will not be disappointed. It's written in a very readable memoir style with good narration and very good... It reads like a novel. I mean, if I didn't know that it happened to you, it reads like a fiction, which is the highest praise I can give nonfiction. So that's...
Totally not sucking up just because we got a...
No, I genuinely... I don't usually enjoy reading books, nonfiction books. I love memoir, though. So this
and Molly, I think you're the first person who ever said that they like the end notes.
I love the footnotes. Oh, but see, I like...
She's a big nerd.
I love footnotes because whenever there is one, I'm like, oh boy. My only complaint was that they weren't right at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, right, damn it.
Well, most of them, you know, to let people know, most of them are just references to where I got something. Like when I say, the Watchtower Society says we can't do this.
Sure.
There's a little number, but if you look in the back, there's not going to be some cool story. It's just going to say, see the Watchtower from September 15th, 1990 or something
But every now and then it quotes every now and then it'll quote the verse or it'll explain more, and I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I appreciate citations. Mm-hmm. You know, that's...
To me, as somebody who made a journey from a faith to atheism, and it was a long journey, and there was a lot of questioning along the way, mm-hmm. and a lot of points where I would justify what I thought I still believed.
Oh yeah,
it's a great read just from that aspect, from seeing, and there's so many of us that have gone through that journey, mm-hmm. and it's amazing the number of obstacles that get thrown in your way when you're making mm-hmm. that journey and to be able to overcome it. And how fortunate you were, I think, that you and your wife both went through that same journey.
Yeah, very lucky.
I can't tell you how lucky. It was just a thought that it was amazing that you managed to find somebody who was dealing with the same doubts at the same time.
Well, maybe that's why he did find her. Honestly, that may have been what drew you together more than, you know. And I love how many people we've talked to that have come and who have written in who came to this place of atheism, who and their journey started with reading about evolution or learning about the Earth in general, and mm-hmm. you know, the Archaeopteryx, and just being like, well, hold on, like, that's, you know, that doesn't make sense. Like, how did that, because that's how it was for me too as a kid. Like, it's like that, this whole Earth in 7 days thing does not jive with what I think happened with evolution. And so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So we got to move on to 5 questions.
Yeah.
And yay.
I apologize, but again, I agree with Molly. Buy the book.
Yes.
So, Molly, why don't you start with question number one?
Question number one is, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
He's got notes.
Yeah. Nice.
So I have to go with Mozart and the Whale. It's from 2005, directed by Peter Ness. It stars Josh Hartnett, and it's about two people with Asperger's who find love. It wasn't that outstanding, but the only other movie I saw for the first time in the last month was Beloved, which I watched for a class, which was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it was not eight.
So unless Mozart and the Whale would have like jumped out of the TV and puked on me, it was better than Beloved.
Also,
so.
Minnesota native Josh Hartnett,
shout out, very good. All right,
question number two is, who's your favorite atheist character?
Yeah, that's a tough one because. So many characters, you know they're atheists, but I don't know if they ever overtly say it, such as Data on Star Trek.
True, right.
But to find someone who actually says it, I'll go with Ruth Ann Miller, played by Peg Phillips in Northern Exposure.
Oh yeah.
Wow, see, that's...
I remember that show. That was a great show.
That's a total deep cut. Well done.
The character Ed Chigliak asks her while he's stocking the shelves in her grocery store in one episode what her belief about God is. And she says, actually, Ed, I'm an atheist. And then she expounds on that. And it's not propped up as the best thing, but nor is it ridiculed, and Ed just kind of nods like he always does, and he's like, okay, tucks his hair behind his ears and moves on.
Yeah. Which character is she? Is she the older?
Peg Phillips, she's mm-hmm. like in her 80s at the time of filming. She's kind of one of the wise old ladies of the show.
She runs
the store.
That's great.
I like it when you find those characters mm-hmm. where it's the fact that they're an atheist is not a defining piece of their character.
Yeah.
It's just that they are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to have those characters that, that are just atheists and are just normal.
Yeah. Yep.
Because that's the whole idea. There are people that believe
the majority
in God.
Of us.
Yeah. There are, atheists are normal people who just don't happen to believe in God. And
yeah. Well, Northern Exposure, to me, is like almost a microcosm of the United States at large. So I think it's very appropriate that one of the 200 residents in the town is an atheist.
Sure.
So.
Absolutely. Should be two. Anyway. Question number three. Question number three. What is your geekiest or nerdiest hobby?
So I really like to make lists about my own life.
Yeah.
I have a list of every movie I've watched, book I've read, TV series, concerts I've been to, ball games I've been to, places I've lived, visited, cars I've owned, Viewmaster reels I own. I choose a word of the year every year. I keep track of money I find on the sidewalk.
Oh my gosh.
I even have a list of my favorite quotes, but then these are also divided up into sub quotes. So like I have a list of mistakes in books, and for films, like I list the film length, the number of films I've seen by the first letter of the title, if I saw the film at the theater and who I was with. And like for the ball games, I have all the scores. So
what's this year's word?
Oh, well, last year I chose the word voice of customer, which sometimes I choose phrases because it's something that I'm working on at work. So
Okay. Love it.
But I've chosen, like, the name of the street I lived on, or I chose, like, a medical condition that my son had and stuff. So, like, different years I choose different things.
To kind of define the year.
And it's fun. So, like, with Mozart and the Whale, when I listed that, I probably could have then sorted it and said, oh, look, this is the... 34th movie beginning with the letter M I've seen, and it's probably like the 890th longest movie I've seen or something
like that. So do you have a spreadsheet?
Yeah, and then it has all the tabs at the bottom, so I can see by alphabetical, I can see by
I have a spreadsheet just for movies, and I keep track of movies in a bunch of different ways because I watch a lot of movies.
And one of the charts I have on it shows like how many I've seen from each year, not the year I saw it, but the year it was released. So like I need to see a movie from 1919 because from 1914 all the way to 2013 I've seen at least one movie from every year except 1919 is the
one
missing. So one day I'm going to go to Netflix or YouTube and just watch an hour long film no matter what, you know.
That is an awesome nerdy hobby. It's strangely exciting.
That is my favorite geeky hobby we've had so far, I gotta say. I'm so happy
that's
right
supremely
now.
Geeky.
I feel like a dog who just got scratched in that spot where you're like,
I toned it down from previous years because now with the internet, like I think, I don't need to keep a list of Hitchcock films or Edgar Allan Poe short stories because I can just find it on Wikipedia anytime.
Yeah,
so now it's just pretty much just my own life stuff.
It's like you're a collector, but what you're collecting is facts about your life.
Yeah, my wife jokes she's going to bury it with me or something. So.
Tell her to publish it.
I was going to say, that's publishable. I think that's fascinating.
Oh, man.
It's like building a portrait of someone.
One thing Molly mentioned about your book is your thing that when you read a book, you don't consider the book having been read unless you've read every single word.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what
that's
got
why you
trouble.
Ended up reading about evolution because you're like, I can't skip this chapter.
Otherwise,
about evolution.
I won't have read the book.
I early on in the book mentioned that to a friend of mine, and then I don't put this in the book, but I developed caveats through the years like, well, it's okay if I don't read the acknowledgments, or it's okay if I don't read the appendix. You know, like I have to start making excuses because logically you don't read everything.
Otherwise, you can.
But I never got to a point where I was like, it's okay to skip a chapter. You know, that would be wrong.
Well,
Yeah.
So then the book hasn't been read. All right, question number four.
Number four is, what is your favorite sandwich?
I like the Mediterranean veggie available at Panera. It has tomato basil bread with jalapeno hummus, lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, red onions, crumbled feta cheese, and chopped peppadew peppers.
It's so good.
That sounds great.
It's so good.
Well, Panera's kind of, they're sandwich champions in my mind. They really, they do good sandwich. And not just because of the bread.
Yeah.
They figure out what to put in between the slices of bread.
It's important for a sandwich.
Yeah.
The stuff in between.
I swear they used to have a sandwich that had guacamole on it, but I could not find it at their website. And the last couple times I've been there, they just stare at me blankly.
I
wondered if it was just available 1 month, 5 years ago.
They do seasonal stuff.
Yeah, I remember. It was guacamole, not avocado spread. I remember that.
Something like that.
Yeah, because I remember I like avocado spread, not guacamole. And I remember thinking, I would get that if it wasn't. Oh, yeah. It was like a Santa Fe something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not crazy. I remember this.
Okay, good.
And question number five.
Question number five is, what is the stupidest, or however you want to define that, worst thing anyone's ever said to you about your atheism? I bet you have some good ones.
Yeah, mostly, though, most confrontations I've been in have been with people who are witnesses trying to convince me to not leave the religion or to come back. So I really had a tough time, but I think the dumbest thing that anyone said is that I should read the Bible.
Oh my! Did they know that you were a witness, an ex-witness?
No.
Okay, God, because that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I've read it. I think I can safely say I've read it 3 times. So,
like a completion, reading,
like every word.
Yeah, but
baguettes and all.
But I think it's a really strong exhortation for atheism, you know, or at least non-Christianity, because it's so messed up if you read it. I even thought that when I was 10, 11 years old and reading it with the idea of strengthening my faith, I was like, wow, these people that I thought were my heroes were disgustingly violent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not just like they beat some guy over the head to steal his bread so that they could feed their family, which I guess I could understand, but these people are like, you know, chopping off each other's foreskins and like slaying people left and right and
raping their way through town.
They would rape a whore and then cut her up into pieces and mail them across town. It was really disgusting.
So. They would do this and God would approve of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was something that they did because God wanted them to.
Yeah, these weren't
the
bad people in the Bible.
Don't rape that angel, rape my daughters. It's much better.
It'll be all okay. And that's the one good person in town.
Yeah, right?
Wow. Goods in quotes.
So, wow. I wish we had more time. This is, again, the name of the book, Deliverance at Hand.
We'll
the Redemption of a Devout Jehovah's Witness, coming out October 15th, which is the day this podcast is going live.
Do you know, is it available on Amazon?
Yes.
Then we will link it up.
We will link that stuff up.
Also, your friendly neighborhood bookstore, I'm supposed to say, because everyone hates Amazon but me.
You know, wherever fine books are sold.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. Including the internet on Amazon.
This is a fine book, and it will be sold there. There you go.
It is.
James, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
It has been a genuine pleasure.
Truly.
And we've been Geeks Without God. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter. Send us your answers to 5 questions. 5 questions at Geeks Without God. We will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Be seeing you.
Hi there. Do you have a few minutes to talk about atheism?
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I have psychic powers. Yeah.